This is KRCU's Going Public, and I'm Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson. President Donald Trump issued a controversial executive order last weekend, triggering widespread opposition. The order temporarily bans refugees from seven Muslim-majority countries like Iraq, Iran, Syria, Yemen, Sudan, Libya, and Somalia from entering the U.S. for 90 days. But the executive order affects more than just refugees. At a press conference on Monday, Southeast Missouri State University President Dr. Carlos Vargas expressed his concerns for international students affected by President Trump's executive order.
With me being an immigrant in this country and starting here as an international student many years ago, I think I have a sense of the kind of concerns that they have and the anxiety that they have.
Although he hasn't spoken with them personally, Vargas says university officials have identified and are working with five students that are from the listed countries.
We wanted to reassure the students that we were going to be doing our best to work with them and try to answer questions and help them understand as much as we can the latitude that they have in doing taking action or making sure that they abide by the law in the present circumstances.
According to Vargas, the students have expressed some concerns and are trying to figure out what this all might mean for them in the coming days. In an email sent to faculty, staff, and students, Vargas stated the university is, quote, consulting with legal counsel to ascertain legal issues and rights as they pertain to our international students, faculty, and staff, and we will reach out to the federal and state elected officials as appropriate. As of the 2017 spring semester, 883 international students enrolled at the university. Vargas says he doesn't want to speculate, but he hopes the president's executive order won't steer international students away from attending Southeast.
I do hope that this is not going to result in students in general feeling that they prefer to go to another place. I mean, many other countries have become very aggressive in recruiting students from other countries, and so I think over the last few years, overall, at the national level, there's been a loss of international students coming to the U.S.
Despite this, Vargas says, his inaugural message, "We Are One," is something the university will continue to advocate for throughout the Southeast community. In other news, Missouri higher education will receive $159 million less in state appropriations under Governor Eric Greitens' budget proposal. KSMU's Scott Harvey reports.
The first budget for the Republican governor was unveiled at a school in Nixa, where Greitens pledged more investment in K-12 education while slashing hundreds of millions in other areas. The governor noted that over the past 4 years, higher education has received a total increase of over $100 million.
So I'm confident that this year they can tighten their belts just like the rest of us and help us focus on excellence and get back to basics.
And he believes it can be done without raising tuition, which is being considered by many school leaders since learning of the pending cuts last month. Dr. Hal Higdon, chancellor of Ozarks Technical Community College in Springfield, believes schools will still need to raise tuition because despite funding increases over the last 4 years, there have been major decreases to higher education over the last 10 years. I'm Scott Harvey.
To get more stories on the recent state budget cuts, visit our website at krcu.org. Missouri lawmakers gave final approval to Right to Work Thursday, capping off a long battle between organized labor and business-friendly legislators. Now that the policy war is coming to an end, unions are bracing for big change. St. Louis Public Radio's Jason Rosenbaum has more on how labor groups plan to respond.
Missouri resisted for decades, joining close to 30 other states in implementing Right to Work, which bars unions and employers from requiring workers to pay dues. But that seemingly endless fight pretty much came to an end last November at the Chase Park Plaza in St. Louis, when Chris Koster uttered these words before a morose crowd of his fellow Democrats. Right to Work essentially became a done deal.
Missouri has chosen new leadership at the helm of state government, and I want to be among the first to congratulate Eric Greitens on his victory.
The stakes in last year's gubernatorial election were crystal clear. Greitens, the Republican nominee, promised to sign Right to Work. And the General Assembly did their part when legislators like Representative Holly Rader of Sykeston sent Right to Work legislation to the governor's desk.
Down in the Boot Hill where I live, We miss jobs every year. We miss businesses every year because of not being right to work and being right there on that corner with Tennessee, Arkansas. Now Kentucky has passed it. And so I'm excited that we might see some economic development in our area.
Organized labor leaders disagree with Rader, contending that right to work leads to lower wages and an unclear impact on economic growth. But there's little debate that the policy will deliver seismic change. If workers don't have to pay dues, unions will likely have less money, and that could place labor groups at a weakened position, especially when it comes to unionizing workplaces or furthering political activity. This stark future presents labor leaders with a choice. Do they continue to fight against right to work at the ballot box or adapt to a new reality? For Wes Epperson, the choice is easy. He's a retired Teamster who lives in Independence, and he supports a union-backed ballot initiative that would effectively ban right to work in Missouri.
Well, the guy benefits from what the union's done, the contracts they've negotiated, including wages, vacation, days off, funeral leave, all these type of things that people enjoy, then I don't think it's too much to ask for those people to pay union dues.
There's no guarantee a ballot initiative will get the necessary signatures or find favor in a state where union membership declined by 60,000 people from 2005 to 2015. Washington University sociology professor Jake Rosenfeld wrote a book on the effect of declining unions on the economy. He's not bullish about a ballot initiative succeeding, adding that passage of right to work is often a lagging indicator of labor's shrinking power.
I would remain pretty pessimistic on this score. I think for unions in Missouri and other states that look like they're going to tip shortly, the best strategy would be preparing for a right to work context.
Rosenfeld says that labor has maintained their relevance in right to work states. In Nevada, for instance, unions are still quite powerful, primarily because workers see them as indispensable. Senate Minority Leader Gina Walsh is a retired member of the St. Louis branch of the Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers. When right to work takes effect, the Bell Fountain Neighbors Democrat doesn't believe lots of workers will stop paying dues.
There's all kinds of benefits. I could go on and on and on. You know, if it wasn't beneficial to the members, they wouldn't be joining, and they wouldn't stay in.
Since the bill headed to Greitens' desk does not affect existing union contracts, it may be a while before the full impact of right to work becomes clear. But if the policy sticks in Missouri, the challenge ahead for labor is to keep members happy enough to pay dues. I'm Jason Rosenbaum.
Last month, Governor Greitens issued plans to balance Missouri's budget for the 2017 fiscal year. Higher education took the brunt of the cuts. Recently, I spoke with State Representative Kathy Swan about the challenges of balancing Missouri's budget. So, Governor Greitens announced his plans to balance Missouri's budget by restricting $146.4 million. Representative Swan, you're on the budget committee. Higher education was hit hardest with $55.9 million, and that's for four-year institutions, from being cut from the budget. But what does that mean for Missourians overall? And is it possible to actually balance Missouri's budget within the next 18 months?
Well, first of all, we are required by law to pass a balanced budget, so it's not an option whether it's possible or not. That's a given. We have to do that. So having that requirement, obviously, is why the governor implemented the cuts that he did. And secondly, there are a couple of discretionary places where the cuts can be made. And unfortunately, education, including K-12 and higher ed, is one of those places where the cuts can come from, because a lot of the money that we have, we do not have the ability or the discretion or the flexibility in order to cut, you know, and try to balance the budget. So unfortunately, that's the lay of the land, and those are the rules by which we play. So the economy apparently is improving. I've not heard anything definitive on the revenue projections coming in, but apparently it's improving slowly. So while, you know, you're questioning whether it's possible over the next 18 months, that's just something that we absolutely have to do.
He also said, in a quote, not a single penny will be taken out of K through 12 classrooms, which leads me to the bill you helped spearhead last year for dyslexia screenings in Missouri schools, which now has become a law. The legislation states that teachers would get training for this, for these screenings. However, according to this 2017 fiscal year, there are going to be restrictions of $44,510 that are going to be withheld. Why was that funding cut, and what is the future of that training going to be for that program?
Well, first of all, the why would be a question, good question for our, you know, the department or the governor's office. As far as down the road's concerned, the task force is still in operation, and the implementation for the screening and the classroom supports and some of the professional development does not begin until the 2017-18 school year. In fact, the department does not have to complete some of their recommendations until later. So we're a little early in the process. The task force has met a couple of times by phone and one face-to-face meeting, and we'll have another face-to-face meeting coming up February 10th. So we're still working on this process. Also, we have a dyslexia specialist already hired that's already covered in the budget working at the department, and some of this initial training can obviously come from her. So we're projecting down the road that our budget picture may still look like it does today. Hopefully it's not. I anticipate that it will improve when, I do not know. So therefore, I think we will be all right, at least with her in place. And then when the budget picture improves, obviously we'll have more money for the professional development piece of that bill.
Coming up, we'll hear from KRCU's Dan Woods and Southeast President Dr. Carlos Vargas after the break.
Hi, I'm David Green. Chances are you might listen to me on your commute, and chances are your radio is your favorite part of your car these days. So when the time comes, donate your ride and turn it into the programs you love.
Donate your car at krcu.org and click on support.
We're back with KRCU's Going Public, and I'm Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson. Like many college campuses, Southeast Missouri State University is looking at the issue of tobacco use on campus. KRCU's General Manager Dan Woods spoke with Southeast President Dr. Carlos Vargas on the monthly program Focus on Southeast to talk about this and the president's goals for the university in 2017.
The university has developed a draft policy to address tobacco use on campus, which will be presented to the Board of Regents in February for their review and approval. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the details on this draft policy that's been developed?
Well, it's basically what we are going to be proposing to the Board of Regents is that there be no use of tobacco. I don't want to use specific terms because the policy actually goes into details such as what is the specific device that you can use or not use.
Because there are many now.
Mm-hmm. And so we're developing this draft. We have sent it out for comment, mm-hmm. making sure that people give us their perspective. When every person reads it, they focus their attention on this or that. And so that's what we want to hear. We want to understand mm-hmm. that. But basically, we will become one more campus in Missouri who, well, not only campus, actually, I must say one more university in Missouri where smoking and tobacco will not be allowed. So because this will apply to not only the Cape campus, but also the Sykeston, Malden, and Kennett.
Mm-hmm. Broadly, what's been the response from the constituencies? Are folks pretty much in agreement that this needs to happen overall or not?
I have been surprised how at the response from the community. It's not been very strong. In some ways, I feel that the community seems to be ready for this to happen. That's at least my interpretation. Mm-hmm. We talked to the students. The students did a very thorough survey of pros and cons and perspectives from different students. And, of course, you do find in some cases students who say, well, you know, why should we not have the ability to do it? But for the most part, there is agreement at this point. There is consensus that this is something that is a positive development for the university, mm-hmm. And that people, I would say, maybe they're not tired, but they really want something to happen, because I know that this conversation started a few years ago. I think a couple of years ago, the conversations got to the point where it was, it felt that it was going to happen, that the university was going to move in that direction. It didn't happen. So what I decided to do rather than just say it's going to happen is we still went to talk to the community, and we wanted to have the input. So we went around, talked to everybody, got input, became convinced that there was support for this type of action. And so at this point, we're going to be proposing it to the Board of Regents to make it a reality.
You may not want to go into much detail on this, but I wanted to ask you about noncompliance, because the draft says reports of noncompliance will be investigated by the appropriate office and may result in disciplinary action. I'm just curious what kind of action may be taken, whether it's a student or a staff member. What would happen? Do we?
Well, it would be probably different. Let me just say to you that we're not putting a terrible amount of emphasis on the compliance area. And the reason for that is I believe that this is something that is going to create a change in the culture. And I think compliance is going to increase as we move forward. I don't believe that it's necessary that we go from where we are right now to 100% compliance, or that we expect that, because the resources needed to do that would be quite high. And you also run the risk of creating an environment that is not a positive environment in the institution.
Okay.
I believe that in some ways peer pressure is going to play a role here. Clearly, individuals who work for the university are in a different situation. They, of course, have to abide by certain rules. The university has the ability to communicate to those individuals what is acceptable and not acceptable from the perspective of their association to the university as an employee. But in terms of the students, then they have, of course, much more latitude in terms of how they respond to these changes. But I believe that students, visitors, individuals on campus will increase the level of compliance as we move forward. We will make allowance for example, in the Show Me Center, there will be an area there that people will be able to go to smoke. The same thing will happen at the River Campus. But in other areas, I think we are going to expect that to be the case, that there be no smoking or use of tobacco products.
Okay. Let's spend a little time talking about 2017. What's coming up this year? What are some of the things that you're focused on as president looking ahead to this year?
Well, we're going to continue to work very aggressively on trying to improve our retention at the university and improve our graduation rates. We're working in very actively on making sure that we review our general education curriculum. I think it's important that we continue to recruit students, so we are making a big effort in establishing a closer relationship with community colleges, not only Three Rivers and Mineral Area Community College, which are very close to us, but are also looking at other colleges closer to St. Louis.
And
we have visited them. We are in the process of establishing agreements with them that will allow them and us to work closer together, so that the students that may be considering coming to Southeast find it easier to make that transition. So we are trying to, in some ways, work so towards making sure that the staff at the community colleges or a certain individual there be very well versed in our systems. And actually, we will even provide access to some of our systems to make sure that they are able to do a better job at advising some of the students as to how to proceed to become a student at Southeast Missouri State University. So we're really excited about this, because I really believe that what we're doing is we're creating that bridge that students can walk on to make it easy to go from the community college to the university. So we're doing that very aggressively, and we're excited about that.
Well, sometimes for a student leaving community college and coming to the to a university, which is much larger, can be a scary thing sometimes.
I think so. Students may get comfortable in the community college, and again, like you said, this is a larger institution, more complex in some ways. And it's perhaps not as complex as it would appear to a student coming from high school, but it nevertheless is a different environment, and so we want to make sure that the students understand, you know, what they're getting into, as well as we're doing that for the high school students. So we're working with them. We're excited that last year we had a significant growth in the incoming freshman class. Last year our freshman incoming class went up by about 9% or so. So that was very nice. Over 150 students.
Yeah.
So we're excited about seeing how this year turns out, but we're hoping that that there will be a continuation of that pattern.
Okay. Well, Dr. Vargas, thanks for being here.
Thank you very much, Dan.
That's our show. You can find these stories on our website at krcu.org or find us on iTunes to hear this podcast. I'm Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson. Join me every Friday night at 6 and Sundays at 3 for KRCU's Going Public.